I'm Paige, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
All right, guys, welcome into Unpaved on your last day of this 2025. I hope it was a great one. People have ups and downs all the time, but man, I thought 2025 was awesome. Moving forward, I love it. I'm always a glass half full guy until I get to my topic here in a second. I'm not a glass half full guy, Sager. Adam G. Sager on Twitter, at Sean Unfiltered. We got some exciting things moving forward in 2026. We can't wait. This team's going to dominate. We're glad you're along for the ride and hope that your resolutions turn to motivation and the motivation turns to discipline so they all come to fruition and you have a great time. It's good to be with you guys. Playoff, college, I mean, NFL MVP on the line, college football playoff getting started. You're with family, you're drinking, you're doing black eyed peas, whatever it is you're doing. I'm a cinnamon guy when you walk in the door and blow it off or whatever, all the good stuff that goes on. And I hope it lands in your lap in 2026, but we're going to work for it here, and we're going to start here. Segs, it's great to be on with you, and I know you'll have something to say because your wise-ass comments about at the end just had to get in yesterday. Oh, I'm going to take TCU.
I just happened to take them by three. I mean, I
took the over because I still didn't trust them because I've lost too much. So I'm with my boys at the game, right, and my son's wife, and we had a great time. When you get your kids together, the result – was pissed off because we're all Trojan fans, but when you're with them, it's like, okay, you get over it quicker because you're with your family, right? Yeah. So, but it's such a bummer. Now, when I say bummer, there's a lot more choice words. I'm going to cuss just as much in 2026. So just so you know. Segs in the building last night. I don't care that it's a December not playoff game like we're going to see tonight, right? A December bowl game that's not part of the playoff.
Correct.
If you're going to play, you go in to win it. Okay. I'm not going to use the Herm Edwards. You play to win. Of course you do. But you recruited the guys behind you, right? So if the guys sit out at wide receiver, you expect the four-star guy, whoever it is, he's on scholarship to play his ass off, right? That's my expectation. So if we're showing up, I'm not showing up to lose, okay?
Right.
But what we saw last night with USC Trojans has been going on for a decade plus. I'm going to tell you the biggest cringeworthy things for former players at USC, Segs, and since I left and since the liner, you know, the national championship teams, right, the Pete Carroll teams, and some of the changes we've had. Do you want to know what the number one bitch about our football team has been? And this is the honest-to-God truth about the USC Trojans. And, Segs, you've known me as anybody else on here that's followed me for all these years. While I love my Trojans, I never, ever over Homer, ever. As a matter of fact, I'm probably more critical, like you would be of your kids. I'm more critical of them than somebody else's. There's somebody you get your ass kicked, and all of a sudden they'll make excuses. I'm not an excuse maker or an apologist for USC. I love them, and it's not personal, but I'll tell you what, the expectations are high, and they say, well, if you don't have expectations, you can never be disappointed. Listen, expectations, they are high. 9 wins and not getting into the playoffs is not good enough. At 10 wins, but you got to – of those 10 wins, you still got to handle the Oregons and you got to handle the Illinois. You got to beat teams like that. But you know what the number one bitch is? It's not, you know, it's always the head coach and things aren't going well. The number one complaint since I've left, and you apply it to any part of this you want, from former players, and I know that they're kind of stuck in the old student body right era at USC because that's how, kind of like, well, you know what it says at Michigan, run downhill and be physical with big 330-pound linemen. Is the lack of physicality on USC's teams. And I do believe 7-on-7, while I like the leagues and I think they're important, I think 7-on-7 is ruining a lot of 11-on-11 football because we don't work on mechanics, anything else. We don't know how to tackle. How many times did you see last night in that football game where guys come and knockout shot, hits him with a shoulder, guy bounce off, goes, these guys are too athletic. The game winner. 47 dudes had a chance at him. He ran through them all, boom, 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 like a pinball, got in the end zone. I think it's 3rd and 4 miles, throws a little flat, but it's like a throwaway to catch and get 5 yards to make 4th down manageable.
Right.
So you get back in field goal range in the overtime stakes. And what do they do? I swear to you, 5 yards into it, I said, oh, he's tackled. I said, well, why is he still moving? Did he step out of bounds? Next thing you know, he broke out and he goes to score. Game's over. It hit that friggin' fast. Turnovers, red zone inefficiency, kicking field goals. Quarterback on 2 of his picks premeditated it, was going to throw it there no matter what the friggin' coverage was. A talented guy, but you can't get to the playoff doing that in games. I know it was against TCU. I know 54,000 people there, so it was a good crowd, too, on a game that wasn't playoff. So it was well thought of by these two. TCU close, USC travels well. So you go in there to win it. Last night, to me, felt like we got beat in a really important bowl game, Segs. It just did. And we took it serious, and I know you're not have all your players. I don't care. That meant the guy who played last night is going to be starting for you next year, more than likely. So you got to tackle. I just sometimes wonder what we're teaching. Are we teaching 7-on-7 philosophy to where when you finally run into a team, I'm not talking about sometimes physical stakes. One thing I know when I play Georgia, it doesn't matter. I may get beat, but they are going to be in a fist fight, and I'm going to be bloodied and battered when it's done. And you can say what you want about my Trojans all the years I played or any time or when Marcus or Heisman trophies. The one thing we did even we got beat, you got fucking bloodied and battered by us. Mm-hmm. Now, you may have got some of us too, and we may have got beat, but I can promise you the fist fight when you were done, old Rocky, no rematch. I don't want one. You didn't want any part of that.
Right.
And they knew it going into a game. Now you play us, and you know what you know? They'll finesse us to death. Once in a while, they'll play great defense. Once in a while, they'll tackle. Once in a while, we'll control the line of scrimmage. But we won't do it all the time. And if we can't do it, how do we find ways to beat you? Giving games away, red zone turnovers, premeditated decisions by a quarterback. The frustration for me is we shouldn't be having this conversation every year about USC. You're telling me we don't have enough physicality in players that did it in high school with a fence around that city or for 10 miles wide, just 10 miles sakes. I'm not even talking about right. going out to the valley. I'm just talking about right. 10 miles wide. You get all over. So with that, those guys, you're telling me they come in, but they're not physical when they come in. What are we doing that has allowed this 7-on-7 mentality to creep into a lot of these college football teams? And I'm speaking for mine. We are not physical enough to win a national championship how it stands. We'll get you for 35 segs, but we'll right. get beat. And it's not just on the defense because we go down there and you get it in. You're on 1st and goal on the 2, and you got to kick a friggin' field goal. Yeah. You know what? And John Robinson would have told North Turner. He said, "Run it 4 times. If you throw the football, you're fired." Now he would have fired North because he left. But you get my point. That's how emphatic it would have been. 1st down, nothing. 2nd down, bam. Loss all the way back. Now we're 3rd and 10. You get you get procedure penalties, pre-snap penalties. The lack of discipline and the lack of physicality at my university is exactly why the TCUs of the world, and no disrespect to them because that's a good program, but you just could get a feel, Segs. I always talk about teams hanging around. You could get a feel. Score 27, you're supposed to win on December 31st.
Yeah.
Give up 30. But that 30 there, don't just blame the defense. Blame shitty tackling, red zone interception, stupid. A couple throws that quarterback who's talented made, I'm thinking, dude, you can't premeditate the series before what you're going to throw on a bender and the guy's sitting in the middle of the field. Can't right. throw it to him. My frustration with this team is I'll never quit supporting them. I love them. But now I want you to be me for a second. I'm a Raider and a Trojans guy right now. Have been forever. Now, how have my Saturday and Sundays fucking look to you?
Exactly. Good right now.
Now, USC, at one point, I thought they were going to be in the playoff. But Segs, it's a good thing they weren't. You want to know why? Because we'd have run into a team that's more physical than us. And then you get in. And I'm not one of those guys, well, if you're not going to win it, I don't want to play it. No, I want to play in it. But we might have seen more. Now, we might have beat you because we're pretty finessed, pretty good there. But we might have beat you that game. But for the most part, we'd have gone insane. At some point in time, physicality is going to get us. And you've seen it. We've had this conversation for a decade. So the frustration of this, Segs, drives me crazy. I know we've got talented players, but I can't keep saying this every year. We got talented players, but talented players. But so are we losing physicality when we get to USC? That's about every player. I'm talking about the whole sum. Are we losing that when a team is physical and can run the football on us and punch us in the face that we don't know how to respond? Is that who we are? Well, Sean, we won all these games. Yeah. But can you beat Ohio State like that? Can you beat Michigan continuously like that? Can you handle Illinois like that? Or when you got to go, Ohio State comes to our building, you're going to go and play the number one team in the country right now, Indiana, in their building next year. 5 years ago, if I said Indiana, you said, yeah, we're going to do it. I don't know if we can do it now against that good team. The whole thing, and I mean, I could go on forever about this, but you watched the game, and what you saw on TV felt worse in the building. It just did. And it's December 31st, and it's the Alamo Bowl, and they were great, and it was fun, and it was awesome. Go away. We didn't get the playoff. Move on. Start recruiting. But what's going to change next year? What tells you what's going to change next year about our football team? Even with the number one recruiting class, what's going to change?
I think the most important thing for Lincoln Riley, and we're going to talk about him in just a second, but the most important thing for Lincoln Riley is you go out. D'Anton Lynn's leaving for Penn State, your defensive coordinator. He's going to Penn State. You have to go out and find a defensive coordinator that is complete 180 of what you've been doing.
And overpay him.
Yes.
And overpay him.
If he is, you know, even if you think, oh, maybe he's not the best coordinator in terms of putting them in the right spots or calling the right plays. I need somebody that's going to come in and take my defensive players and give them a mentality of we are going to out-physical you every part of our defense.
We may get beat, but they'll know they were in a fight, right, Six?
Yes, you got to come in with some sort of.
I need a prayer coaching my defense. Yes. I'm sorry to tell you. I just do. It can't be the pomp and circumstance. We're the Trojans, and we've got a quarterback you that every time you turn around another first. I get all that. Lincoln's great at that. And I know we'll get to him in a second after I knock out this Augusta Precious Bells, but I want to make this point too. And I saw Isaiah talk about the gun, and I'm glad because I had a note to remind myself. I made a mental note in that friggin' stadium last night. That this is exactly going back to that 7-on-7 mentality for me. Do you realize that had I looked at Coach Robinson when he was at SC or Cold North, hey, you know what? We're on the half-yard line. Let's get the shotgun. We see it all the time.
Right.
Well, Sean, it works. Yeah, coming down. No. The mere optics of the gun on the half-yard line, Pete Carroll knows it more than once because it happened in Seattle too.
Yep.
It's not Pete's fault. I'm not talking about Pete, but this mentality across football that we literally can't have grown-ass men. You can't get under center because we can't operate our offense under center on the half-yard line. So now, how are you supposed to feel about physicality? You call Bruce Matthews up right now, Roy Foster, Don Mosbar, Anthony Munoz, Ronnie Lott, Marcus Allen, Jack Del Rio, Dwayne Bickett, Tim McDonald. I can go on and on and on. And I said, give me your number one complaint about it. We are not physical, and we don't know how to play physical football. They'll all tell you that in their first two sentences, every one of them. Then we'll get to all the other stuff that bugged the hell out of us. And when you have that mentality, you're going to win some really good games. Segs is going to look really pretty sometimes. It's really cool, right? And then when it gets to nut cutting time, I'm talking about sustained consistency. You can't.
Right.
Because you run into another team that's just as finesse as you, but does what USC used to do to people, physically take your soul, and by the fourth quarter, you wanted no more of it. And other teams, Alabama's done it under Saban. Teams know about that. But you can't live it. I'm going to tell you who we are. Old school, I'm going to tell you who we are with more recruiting. We're an old school Big 12 team that can play on a fast track and score a million points, but we'll give you short fields, and when it gets down to a fist fight, we'd rather knock you out with a back it up and knock you out with a swinging right that knocks you out than stand in there, even if we tell you that, and do the way they used to do it. And there's certain things that don't ever change. Hence why Kyle Whittingham's last, and he's about to show you the same thing in Michigan. To adapt in the finesse, never let the physical leave. Brian Cushing was standing on the sidelines last night. I didn't get to talk to Cush. Another one. Cush, first of all, looks like Sags. He could still go quiet.
Oh, yeah.
I could have, matter of fact, I think I could have lined him up and he'd have made more hits than some of the other ones.
Oh, yeah.
But I was watching him and thinking during the game, I know, because he was like, I think, our captain on the coin toss thing, right, Sigs?
Yeah.
And I saw him walk out there and I thought, you know, a guy like him, he was at the tail end of our real physicality when we dominated you physically, Rick, on both sides of the ball. But it'll make guys turn over in their grave. It'll make current players say, we don't care about the finesse of the optics. The optics of of knowing when you came to play us, I can always beat a finesse team. But when you know going in that this is going to be one of those, whenever I played the Steelers in the NFL, didn't matter who, I knew that Greg Lloyd and Chad Brown and LeVon Kirkland, I knew coming out of there that I was going to be a bruised and battered. And every time I played the Steelers, it was the same friggin' feeling. We beat them, they beat us, but guess what happened? He walked out, hugged him, and said, dude, quarter one to quarter four, it was a fist fight, and it was a body blow fist fight, and I hated it. But you had to stand in it, and you gained respect. Same thing here. We don't knock enough teeth out, man. We try to upstairs to close our eyes and try to tackle you, but we don't hit you so hard that your breath, you can't even, you don't even want to come back out. We don't do that anymore. And on my offensive linemen of the past, I can guarantee you, watching what they watch sometimes has got to drive them crazy. And because linemen don't like finesse teams. And when you're labeled a finesse team, that's like calling you a pussy in real life. That's what that's called. When they say, oh, they're finesse, you know what? Basically, we're telling you, you play like a pussy. If you're right, that's the way you dance around. And I know we got it in us, but we don't have it in us consistently enough. We're always hovering on the edge of we may get there, but we just don't close it out. Last night was a poster child for who we've been for a decade plus.
Yeah, and it frustrates the hell out of me. It's only going to, I don't want to say it's only going to continue to get worse, but I think overall in football, not just USC, but overall in football, yes, we still have our Michigans, our Georgias, our teams like that. But
you mean the teams with the rings on their fingers still say? Those teams?
The physicality, right. Alabama's another one. The physicality of college football, of football, period, not just college, high school to college to the NFL. The tackling is atrocious. I don't know if they're teaching this lower your shoulder and just try and bump them down type of shit that we see all the time.
Happened last night.
Yes, at every single level. But I don't know if it's guys are scared to tackle, but it's just a bad watch right now when you watch guys try to tackle. Now, yes, we'll see. I was sitting here watching
your kids are being taught better. Your kids know how to tackle with their head up better than guys that age do.
I was watching Iowa Vandy today and whatever Relia Quest Bowl. And I mean, now Iowa, they teach physicality. They teach their linebackers how to hit, wrap, and tackle. And we've seen it time and time again.
But if they don't win 6-3, they can't win the finesse game. Right, that's exactly, their problem, yes. Right? They'll get any finesse players, problem. Right? Segs, with that real quick, and I'm going to knock this out, and I know we got more to talk about in Lincoln Riley. I know you got something on your mind with him. I'm going to tell you, as I said at the beginning of the show, a 7-on-7. The 7-on-7 thought process. All reps aren't good reps, just because you're going out and throwing it all over the line. But there is a mentality in 7-on-7 that players take with them, because I know I've coached them for 30 years. And 7-on-7, some of it's a money grab, some of it's good, so depends. But it's killing 11-on-11 football, because all it is about is, I think, 7-on-7 makes me feel like that's how NIL started. Honest to God, that's like the shoes with the basketball part, you know, the AAU. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel like 7-on-7 kind of shifted the narrative. Oh, man, we got to look pretty, wear the towel down, instead of just getting down and dirty. 7-on-7 ain't down and dirty. 7-on-7's bullshit if you don't coach it right.
Right.
It's just guys holding the ball.
It's good for pitching up to the line. Guys, it teaches a little bit, but overall.
Caught on time if you're getting coached right in 7-on-7.
Right. Yes,
what it doesn't teach, it makes you feel like, oh, my guys just want to be in a two-point stance, and that mentality creeps in. Oh, we'll win that way. You can't win like that. So there's certain things that will never change. Great defense and physicality will travel. We can say it. It gets so nauseating saying it because it's old. But I can tell you one thing. Cyclical things, 3-4, 4-3, spread offense, get all gun, shotgun underneath center. We're seeing more people get under center a little bit more, Segs, right? Yep. It's McVay, Shanahan. But you know what it is? It's the mentality. You know one thing that never goes out of style? That's Jimmy Stewart. That's the classic Cary Grant. And people are like, who's this? Go back old school. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about. Wear a coat and tie on the golf course, classic. Just, it's still the essence of that good cologne that's just subtle, but you feel like you're in a classy someplace that Sean Connery is about to walk in with a martini, right? Class. That never goes away. You may have trends that go that. You know what the trend is? You know what never goes away and shouldn't? The physicality, the Kyle Whittingham approach. You know what is the, fly by night, just do this, just go score a bunch and look pretty and get guys paid and get receivers 150 catches. But when it gets right down to it, we really don't have a lot of soul and substance. That's 7-on-7. That's the old, oh, man, that fad, we're not doing that anymore, are we? Right? We're the Zubaz. Remember Zubaz? That's it. Zubaz. Come in, hit quick, do it all, and then boom, go away. But it ain't going to last, and you wouldn't wear that shit to your own funeral. Okay. And it may look comfortable, but you wouldn't be caught dead in it. And it made up plenty of money. God bless them. If you were a meathead and you lifted on Muscle Beach, you had right. Zubaz on with the tank, oh, yeah. right? Those days have passed, right? Or, you know, all the crazy ass stuff. That's who football's become if you let it. You should never, ever allow physicality. The one thing that has to sustain is that. And last night was a good example of why it didn't. All right, Segs, real quick, let me talk about my friends at Augusta Precious Metals, who are a great partner in this show, is a great advertiser, great friend, and also is a difference maker. I'm just telling you guys, I can sit here and go through the boring parts that you don't want to, you know, the stuff in class. You're like, I don't want to know that. I don't need to know that, but I do need to know this. Well, I'm giving you the I do need to know stuff with Augusta Precious Metals. I want you to text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. And I want you to go in there, and there's that $40 trillion debt, the debt threat, which we're going to hit in 2026. I don't want to get with all the minutiae because some people say, well, it's because of this guy or this press. I'm not talking about that. Washington's up and down no matter who the president is. And if you're relying on the dollar and the value of a dollar to carry you through and watching gold, that'd be like, it would be like saying, okay, that car is, you open up the hood and there's nothing in it or a little bit in it. You take you a year to get it started. And you open up the other one and say, oh, that's what I need. That's what this is, dollar gold. Well, you look at something, it's literally punching you in the face like a God's blessing saying, do your research. Just educate yourself. And that's what they're doing at Augusta Precious Metals, plus helping you to get involved and do it so you have confidence in retirement, that you feel great and secure, that you're creating peace of mind and not letting Washington dictate every move, because it affects all of us. It just does. It doesn't matter what walk of life you come from, the color of your skin, your religion, how much money you make. It's going to hit. And sometimes it hits different. But somebody's walking up giving you a tangible asset and it's gold and you're getting, I want you to be educated on it so you can make that right decision. I was late to the party, no more. 2026 is a big time moving year for me, not only with Augusta Precious Metals, but in this gold, silver, and precious metals business. Don't be late to this. How many times has a friend said, man, you see that guy got in that investment, he started this, or he got into gold and 5 years later, look at the value of it, look at the price of what per ounce in any walk of life. Now do you. How many times we said, I don't want to miss out on the next good thing. The next good thing, I don't have to hit you over with the sledgehammer. Sit right there. If I do, let me. Go to Augusta Precious Metals. Go in there and hit my description, the link in the description below, or go text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. Just do me a favor. It doesn't hurt to educate yourself like you would in any other thing you do. An investor wants money. Your bank, how much interest you get. And I put it here with what are my overdraft fees? What kind of interest am I getting here if I put it in a savings as opposed to a checking? But what if I told you one's more valuable than the other? Why wouldn't you? And you're protecting what's yours with tangible assets, and do that at Augusta Precious Metals. Text Sean to 35052. If you don't do anything else with it, educate yourself. So when somebody comes and asks why you didn't do it, you have a legitimate friggin' answer. But if you don't do it right now, I don't see what your legitimate answer is. I just don't. Because the value and the price of gold is not, and it's not, I keep reading these reports saying, dude, people that are like have never been into it are jumping in. Why? Because you're smart. And I know you guys are smart. Augusta Precious Metals.
All right, Sean, let's wrap up this USC talk with a little talk about Lincoln Riley. Former Trojan, national champion, running back tandem with Reggie Bush. Lendell White comes out, and I mean, he was going off during the game last night. He started with, you know, makes sense. A shitty team couldn't win a shitty bowl. We got, do y'all ever practice tackling, or is it always about offense? And then I truly don't know why I'm mad. I knew better. My fault. 20 years of fucking bullshit talking about what you're talking about with the physicality. Maybe one day I can see him in the playoffs. Maybe one day doesn't look like any time
soon.
We're
not good enough. Yeah, we're not good enough.
We just lost to a weak ass TCU. So that means we're sorry as fuck. I mean, that's just a former Trojan who comes from the last time it was a truly winning program year after year after year. And what we expect from the USC Trojans.
Okay.
So my question to you is, Lincoln Riley, he's seeing this stuff. We see the same thing. He kind of had the same thing at Oklahoma with the physicality, the defense in the Big 12. You know, he could score 45, but he'd give up 35. And then it's kind of been that way at USC. So is Lincoln Riley the right man for the job?
Sigs, it's such a valid and great question, a great point. And my guy, Lenny, Lendell White, very passionate.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But Sigs, that's how Lendell may have described it a little different than others might. Anthony Munoz would approach it a little different,
yeah.
But you'd get the same message in a more calm way. But right. Lenny knows, and that's how Lendell played.
Yeah,
knocked
yeah.
you in the mouth. Lendell right. was, you didn't put it this way, and he had some wiggle, but Lendell was never known as a finesse guy.
Right.
And we loved it and loved watching him play, and everybody loved it. And Lendell was a stud, and I love his passion. And that's my dog. But, and he's right. See, Sags, I'm cutting him slack. I said, that's who we've been for 10 years. It's been a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
Sans the time when Lenny played and had all the guys there, right? And we were winning. We could yep. finesse you with Bush and Leiter, but we could also line up. If we had to run it 10 times, we could. And that's the way you want it to be. Your question about Lincoln Riley. Now, Sags, when people say this, can you know, when you get asked a question like that, there'll be some that, well, you don't feel you want to hurt Lincoln's feelings. I think Lincoln Riley's a hell of a good dude. And I had a chance to meet him, engaging. And listen, if you want to sit down with 15 of the brightest offensive minds and their thought process over the last 20 years, you have to include him.
Oh, 100%.
You just do. You have to include him. But then it draws the line is what we're doing head coaching part, or listen, if Lincoln Riley was on any, if he was coaching quarterback, I mean, calling plays for the Giants and Jackson Dart, calling plays for the Raiders, they'd be better offensively. They just would. He's a brilliant play caller. Now, there are times when we get a little too predictable and we play a little bit too sideways at times that, you know, that I would do things different, but he's got a great feel. You can question the timing of some of his calls, you know, like you can't every coordinator. But you can't question his understanding of how to attack a defense. He's pretty damn good at it. But the thing that is missing, Sags, is whether it's his attack and what they're on the practice field. That's why I never know. Well, what do we, from a distance, it's so hard for me, but I can only deduct from a distance that we're not preaching physicality. You may say it, but are you living it? That's the difference. I can sit here and say, I want to be a billionaire. I want to win Powerball. I want to turn my business into this. But if we're not going to work or doing stuff that's not just on the show, off the show, or if you're just going and showing up to practice and not doing other work or showing up at your business and you're a salesperson and you work 9 to 5 and you don't make a call outside of work or go visit somebody, you're probably not going to be very good at it. So are we just chattering about we want to be physical? Because, Segs, I keep going back and I keep going back and I keep going back. Is it the head coach or is it the philosophy the head coach brings with him that you automatically think, look, there's nobody in the world that thinks, now they want to run it. Like Mike Leach wanted to run it.
Yeah.
He wants to run it. McVay, that spread, the college guys, the whoever it is you're leaning on, Jeff Levy, they all want to run it. Lane Kiffin,
right.
Sarkisian, we all want to run it because we know the value of it. But Segs, with this, I can only get to a point of saying, at no time in his life will he ever be accused of commitment to defense, even though they may say it, and a right. physical team. Now, you want to go beat somebody in 7-on-7 frat league or football like this when you're just going out and letting it rip and it's a shootout up and down the field? Give me him. I'll have it all day long up and down the field. But then it gets down, we got to get 3rd and 2 and 4th and 1, and we can't do it. It's got to be a mentality check. It's got to be the fact that going in, our expectations are just score 40 and the rest will be okay. Because I look at Alex Grinch's past. He was freaking good.
Yeah.
Oklahoma did some nice things when he was at Washington State, why he got in Alabama as an analyst, all those things. And then I start to look, Sags, and I'm thinking, how can this continue to happen that for 30, 25 years, we've been described as a finesse team? So is it Lincoln? But when does it stop? You know, where does the guy find, said the buck stops here? I don't give a shit what you say. We're throwing it 22 times and we're running it 40 and we're going to tackle it. If you don't tackle, you come sit by me. I don't care where you're from or how much we're paying you. When does that accountability come in? Because you can't tell me we don't get good players. But you know what, Sags? When's the last time you described a USC team to me? Just to me in our last 12 years, decade. When's the last time you described me when you walked in, saw me and said, man, Sean, I'm talking about consistently, not a one game right. or one half. You said, that looks like old SC.
Yeah.
Physical. I'm talking about the physical Never. Part. But what do you always, what would you always say when you, man, boy, they've got some offense, dude. They can score. They've got great receivers, team speed, makes a big, see the catch in the end zone last night by the young kid.
Yep.
Another great play. And the quarterback, and then the quarterback will throw it into coverage. You're like, well, what are we doing here? And to feel like you got to drop back and get in the gun and throw it on 3rd and 1, John Robinson will be turning over in his grave, as will John McKay. So, you know what? I'll tell you what. He's the right guy to call plays. We can't help but question, is he the right guy moving forward, and who is, for what USC brings to the table? We are a physical program that likes to add finesse. That's what we were. And I don't care that it's 20. Things don't change. No, it doesn't have to change. Who's going to win the Super Bowl this year? The most physical team. Philadelphia did last year. All the thing. And then they were able to have some great finesse. Super Bowl teams win because they hit you in the mouth harder than you hit them, and they can take a punch better than you can. And then if you get a quarterback play, I've said it a million times. So, Segs, I get to the point where I think he'd go give him a place where they throw it 45 times and it's all pretty, yes, and he gets good quarterbacks. I just don't think in their soul that he knows how to command physicality. And him and about 35 or 40 other coaches in big-time football that are finesse as well. But there's got to come a point in time where you're either physical or you're not playing for me. Yeah. That has to come. And in a 7-on-7 NIL soft pussified area of score 40 and we'll give up 38 and hope we win is not for me. I love Lincoln. I do. I'd rather have him as my offensive coordinator than my head coach, judging from our consistent lack of sustained physicality. Take a look. What did I just say?
Yep.
Segs, that's why I said, is it the coach? Clay Helton? Is Lincoln Riley? Who is this guy? Who is that guy? And then it hits Pete Carroll and John Robinson and stops. Who is Paul Hackett? Who was anybody else? You know, the list goes on.
Yeah.
That is as telling a statistic. They said, well, you wanted Clay out. Dad was an offensive line coach too. Clay's dad's been there a long time. You wanted Clay out. Okay. You bring in finesse and boo, throw it all over the lot. 35-18. How many national championships Lincoln won at SC or in Oklahoma? How many? What those things? You keep getting. I mean, that quarterback guru, Heisman trophies, first round picks. You offensively, that's, you want him. Oh, no doubt, you want him. But this is as telling as it gets. So when you're bitching about the complain about what they bring to the table coming in and the culture they create, not what they're doing on game day because everybody screws up and they do it. It's what's in your soul, not right. We're a cosmetic football program right now. That's who USC is. And Lincoln Riley, I hate to say it, he is the talk of the town when you walk into the party, brother. Man, we can throw it. Hey, let's go over here and have a real conversation. Let's sit down and talk about how you guys are down 2 touchdowns. And now let's talk about how you're going to attack. Well, we're still learning to do that. That's the response. So I'd rather you learn how to call finesse plays and be a physical in your soul. I'd rather have soul be physical, finesse be cosmetic.
Yeah.
I would rather have been the other way around, because the other way around will get you 9 wins and you'll upset somebody. But there's no way we can roll through Ohio State, even Indiana. Dude, Indiana's more physical than us.
Yeah.
Now, hear what I'm saying about this. Mendoza wins the Heisman Trophy.
Their head coach. Look at Kurt Sagan. Look, watch Kurt Cignetti do an interview. He's like physical in the interview.
Right. Look at the guys. Kirby Smart. Defense, be physical. The rest will take care of it. They won 2 national championships with a walk-on who wasn't even supposed to be playing there.
Yeah.
And he was the MVP in both games. And he could get he was the MVP in both of those national championship games, right? So I just say I could go on, and I think it's obvious, but to answer your question, love Lincoln. And like to buy him a beer. I'd like to buy him a beer and say, what are we teaching that allows coach after coach after coach? Is it the organization or our recruits in California just not as good as they used to be? What is it? Or when they walk in the door, they automatically think, because if I walk in the door, you know what I'm thinking as a quarterback? We're going to finesse him to death. I'm going to be a first-round pick, and I'm going to win the Heisman Trophy. I'm not walking in the door saying, I'm only going to throw 25 times a game, but we're kicking your ass.
Yeah.
We're too cosmetic, and that's what happened again last night.
Yeah, this hire of this defensive coordinator will be the biggest hire of Lane Kiffin's career, because if it continues like this, he will not be at USC for long.
Lincoln Riley, you mean not Lane Kiffin, Lincoln Riley.
Oh, yeah.
Lincoln Riley. Lane Kiffin's to hire a defense coordinator. He had one in PC. No, I'm with you. I do it all the time, Sigs, because he was there at a time when it didn't happen. The same with Sark.
Yep.
But what if – you know I love both of those guys. They're my dogs. Okay, I'm going to just run through real quick. Lincoln Riley, just give me your one sentence about him. Strength.
Offense.
Steve Sarkisian.
Offense.
What kind of offense for Lincoln Riley?
Big finesse. Tempo, finesse.
Yeah, big finesse. Right? What about Sark at SC?
Same thing. Would add in a run, a little more of a run game.
But had a little bit more physicality, but he had some really talented players. And Lane, similar. Now, I'm not talking about this. It's similar. Spread it out, play fast, and go do it. Josh Heupel, right?
Yep.
Now, I say Kirby Smart. What do you say?
We're going to run the ball hopefully 35 times and keep the ball away from you. And then when you're on offense, we're going to beat the hell out of you.
Okay. I'll just stop there.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just stop right there. And you know the answer. And yes, Rob Ryan is still at Dustin at Southern Cal. He's a coaching linebackers. And I don't even know who called the defenses last night. Rob was, I think, up in the.
I saw it. I can't remember. It wasn't
Rob. I don't think it was Rob. I don't think called him. Now, Rob's got the personality. Rob will dress your ass down. The question is fitting in. But it's just when you go there now, SC used to be. Sags, I'll end this with this. I know it's been a long conversation, but it's warranted. When I chose USC over BYU at the recruiting, this is a truth I'm sitting here today. Do you know what the majority of people said to me? The people that were USC fans, but they didn't care where I went. You're going to give up your Heisman Trophy to go run the ball at USC? Because I was a passing guy, you know, good move and athletic, but BYU, I was, and I don't mean to, I was going to be the guy, we're going to run roughshod over Mark Wilson and Jim McMahon and all those things. And Steve Young was going to move positions. And I don't mean that arrogant, but that read Steve's book, he'll tell you. But my point, LaBelle, that was, and when people didn't, whether you were church school or not, everybody said, Sean, you're going to be the guy. You're going to throw the ball with Roger French and LaVelle Edwards and Norm Chow. Are you kidding me?
You're going to go have some
fun. And I chose USC. And you know, a big reason, aside from that I was an SC fan, is I liked the macho part of that program. I did. I liked the fact that we could line up and we'll beat your ass in a bar fight and we'll also beat you on the field physically, not literally. You get my point.
Yeah.
And when I chose USC, that was it. So that epitomized who it was. They'd already told me, and I already knew when I went in there, that we were turning and tossing it to that guy, wore number 33, Marcus Allen, or anybody else who was a great back. It started there. We need a good quarterback play, but it started there. We didn't really want our Heisman Trophy quarterback. We wanted to be a running back because we were going to wear you out physically. So I went there knowing I was physical. My first thought about BYU was win, and they ended up winning a national title anyway in 84. It was, I'm going to throw the ball all over this lot. And I chose USC because I liked the physical part of being it. And it was an unselfish decision. And I mean, just because I loved that part of it. I don't know what happened when I went to BYU, but that was my approach, thinking finesse, physical. And it's, I think that's the way it is now, Segs. I went in doing that. So that epitomized what we were. And now when you go to USC, you know, it's got to be the first thought. Man, if you're a perimeter guy, you're going on offense, you got it made, man. You got it made. You're going to get paid, dog.
If you're Mekhi Lemon or Jacoby Lane, you're going to be a top two-round pick, and you're going to go.
But you won't have a ring when you leave the school.
St. Brown, yes. Right.
That's right.
Right.
That's where we're at.
All right. Well, we'll see who he hires as a defensive coordinator. We'll see what next year looks like for the USC Trojans. And it's crazy that college football is coming to an end, but we got some good bowl games today.
Groundhog Day, Sigs. You said the same thing to me last year. I said the same thing to you. When is it going to be? When is it going to be? When is it going to be? And here we are. And hence why the guy who you hired before Lincoln Riley and before somebody else, before he has been on the radar at USC. Every time there was a hire, I was like, well, man, let's go take. Because he is the closest thing to an old school USC coach. The closest thing to John Robinson in the history of USC program since he left USC and since passed away is Kyle Whittingham. Yep. That's a fact. That is a fact. And so just for the mere optics of it, he ain't walking it. And if Kyle Whittingham's inviting you into a recruiting trip, what do you think you're, as a player, you know you're going to have to do, Segs? You better be prepared to fist fight, brother, because if you're not, finesse doesn't live here. So enough. We beat it into the ground, but there's enough information there to go for five shows.
We could keep going. Let's jump, to the NFL. We're going to run through some quick topics here. Schefter says Tomlin could be out as the Steelers coach if they lose on Sunday. Right move for Pittsburgh, right move for Tomlin, right move for both. What do you think here with Mike Tomlin if they lose on Sunday?
Yeah, my feeling on Mike Tomlin will never change. He's a winner. He has, all he's done is win there. And I know they're impatient with the Super Bowl. I love Mike Tomlin. He would be, if he wants a job, he'll be unemployed for about 5 minutes if he wants a job, because you would hire him, because, you know, speaking of the toughness, that's what he'll bring. Now, they're not as tough as they've been in the past, Segs, injuries, changes, but at least the mentality is always there. He knows that in order to win games, you got to be tough. I think the speech is probably ready for a change. I do. I think it's probably ready for a wow factor change, meaning not a wow factor coach replacing a wow factor coach. Is okay, it's time, because Pittsburgh's, I mean, you want to talk about the everyday grind of doing the same things all the time. That's Pittsburgh. I think maybe it's time for a new voice, and it's time for somebody else to get a voice like Mike Tomlin in their building, like the Giants, like the, I mean, if the Raiders were to come up, the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't care who it is. Mike Tomlin will win no matter where he goes. But while I know he loves Pittsburgh and they've been good to him, the speech, Andy Reid can leave Philly, Mike Tomlin can leave Pittsburgh, is probably time. And now I'm not even saying it for Pittsburgh more. I'm talking about for Mike. It's time for Mike to go get rejuvenated somewhere else. If they do lose and they move on from him, you can't tell me it's because Mike's not a good coach. It'll be because it's just time, and the speech and everything else, it's time to move on after all that time. Kyle Whittingham and the college football can do it. You can do this the same way to Mike Tomlin. And I don't think Mike would, maybe a bummer at first, but it's okay. Pittsburgh's had three coaches in about the last 60 years.
Right.
It's time.
It's insane. The amount of coaches.
For a guy I would love to play for. I love Mike Tomlin. Yeah. Coach.
Bucks, they don't even control their own destiny right now. If they win and then Atlanta wins and beats New Orleans, the Carolina Panthers still go to the playoffs based on tiebreakers. I mean, that's how crazy it is right now in the NFC South. So Tampa, and then Todd Bowles comes out and talks about, he says the QB position has to get better. We have to block it better. We have to do all this stuff better on offense. I know he's been good over the last couple years, but it still hasn't led anywhere. Are we overrating Baker Mayfield and this Bucs offense? And did the loss of Liam Cohen really hurt Baker? Or was it just the injuries? I mean, we can't use the injuries when we see other quarterbacks doing things with their stars injured week after week or year after year. So, I mean, are we overrating Baker Mayfield and this Bucs team moving forward, but more so Baker?
I think that there's certain parts that we may overrate him, saying how he can carry a team. And I'm going to explain what I mean real quick. I think Baker Mayfield can play. I could put it to you this way. Cleveland doesn't have a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield on their roster right now.
Right. Yeah.
I'll tell you that. So he can play. And he's Baker is at times erratic because he's that energy geyser bunny, right? Say when that's actually when he's at his best, bouncing around like a pinball, doing all kinds of stuff. I do admire, what's not underrated, the leaderships and maturity steps he's taken and holding his team and himself accountable. He's doing it more now than he's ever done. But I stop there. And I do think he's a really good player. Maybe we overrated the early start saying he's an MVP candidate, Segs. I think he's good for them. But here's what I do know. And you mentioned we can't make excuses about injuries. You're damn right we can't. But here's what, if I said Aaron Rodgers, 10 people hurt, can he carry the roster still when he was in Green Bay? We saw it in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
We saw that playoff run, and they went and won. We referenced it yesterday. Certain players elevate, and if they got three injuries, Brady in New England. I know that for a long time, we always think about Moss and Gronkowski. Now do Bernard Gaffney, good player at Florida. Yep. And Hogan, who was a lacrosse player and came in. He had an incredible ability to elevate average players to really good players. Yeah. That's not to take away or diminish that the guy didn't have talent, but put it this way, if there was something else to get out of him, certain quarterbacks when they're in their prime, Brady, Rodgers, Manning, Warren Moon they get something out of you, even if it's the sixth receiver. I think Baker Mayfield, for him to be great at times, he's got to have really good players around him.
Yeah, it's
got to. Well, Sean, doesn't everybody? Situation. No, it's not the case. Now, to win a Super Bowl, you do, but he's not going to load you up and carry you with just pure, raw, beautiful, smooth play. He's going to hit the pinball. You're going to tilt it, and you lost the ball, and you're tilting your pinball. He comes back out, makes a few plays, throws a pick. I'll tell you this, though. I like the ball in his hand late when it's an adversity-filled game. He finds ways.
Right.
But it won't look pretty. But he is a perfect guy that needs. See, Rodgers no longer can carry a team without great players. Look at Pittsburgh right now. Although he may have been the MVP of the team this year, the numbers aren't gaudy. Why? He doesn't have the weapons. Throw him in Green Bay 8 years ago, the dude's still in the MVP hunt, no matter who's playing for him.
Yeah.
Brady was the same. Certain guys need great players healthy to play. Baker will elevate you if you're at that level because his motivation, it'll challenge it. But Baker can't take a 5 and make him a 9 right now. And this is coming from a guy who's admired him. I love his walk-on mentality. I love him on my team. I think he's a hell of a starting quarterback. I think teams have quit on him too soon. But their success is going to be greatly hinged on, we get good field position. Are my receivers all healthy and do it? And so it's been a Dow Joneser. And he's had part of that in his career. But I think he can come out of it better now than he did in the past and handles failure better. I want him as my starting quarterback in Tampa next year. Yes.
And we will pick that game here in our six pack of picks in just a few minutes. Last one. Eagles will rest their starters in week 18. They're still fighting for that number 2 seed. But Jalen Hurts and a majority of their starters will rest in week 18 against the Commanders. Not saying that you can't go beat the Commanders because they're a really bad football team, but do you like the idea of resting your starters when you could still move up and get to a second seed and possibly, and where this matters is, yes, you'll get that first round home game. But if you win, and let's say the Bears win in week 18, get the 2 seed, you're sitting at the 3 seed, or you lose, and that second round game, you have to go to Chicago. Who now you're already
talking about the second round, the divisional round of the wild,
yeah, the division, wild card. The round. Wild card, right. You'll host if you're Philly. Right. That's locked in. You're going to host, let's just say, the Rams. And right. Then you win that the 2 game. Seed. Yeah.
Right.
If you go to the divisional round, now the Bears, who got the 2 seed because, let's just say, you rested everybody, now you have to travel to Chicago and play a Bears team that already came to Philly this year and kind of manhandled you for the most part. Agreed. So do you like the idea of Sirianni resting all his starters here when you could still gain an extra home game with a win and a Bears loss this week?
Here's one reason why I hate the bye week too for the number 1 seed sake. I'm just only reason. Let's say you go into week 18 and you've sewn up the number 1 seed. Now, if you got a twinge in your hammy, sore shoulder, rest those guys. I 100% agree. Because that risk is too big for the reward. The risk is greater than the reward. But I'm not borrowing trouble, man. I'm just not. Well, if you go into and say, yeah, what if 14 of my guys get hurt? Well, then you weren't destined to win it anyway if you're playing it. The number 2 seed, in my opinion, is too important to squander. I don't think Philadelphia is good enough to go on the road and regular right now the way they're now. They're getting a little better. But right now they're not explosive enough in my mind. That they're going to have to win a different way. I'd rather be at home because it's such a great advantage for them. And going into Chicago, not kind of, they manhandle them pretty good, Sigs, on the physical side as well, which Philly is usually really good at. Right. So I'm with you 100%. And I hate you lose so much the feeling of confidence. Sigs, think about this. You rest them in game 17. If you're the 1 seed, I'm talking, you get a bye week. If they were the 1, I'm talking.
Yeah.
Then you get a bye week. It's 3 weeks before you play a competitive football game. How often do we see the number 1 seed get beat? They get beat. Why?
Yeah.
It's somewhere along because I want to keep playing because if you've made 4 birdies in a row, you want a rain fucking delay? No. You want to play through the rain because, hey, the hard stuff's not coming down forever. You're playing the best round of your life. Don't let the, if you're rolling, I want to keep playing. And so even by way, I'm one of those guys, so I'm coached to say, can you give me a half? Let's get out there. Because not only the competitive side, but Segs, the rhythm of doing what you're doing, 3 weeks off is about training camp length now. That's a long friggin' time and trying to simulate it on the practice field. And you're not pounding pads this late in the season a lot. So what do? You go in and somebody hits you in the mouth like, damn, the team who's used to, they're just healing up, getting in the plunge pool and knocking it around again.
Right.
Now as the 2 seed, yes, just looking at where you've got to go, I would think in Philly, you want to stay there. I don't like a lot of rest. Guy's hurting, got a shoulder, sore. He comes out, plays well. Or if your quarterback drops back and gets hit 5 times in a row and you're like, we ain't blocking anybody, get his ass out. Trust that Tanner can come in and do his job, right? So I don't like it, Segs, and I never like it when there's a game on the line or something to play for on the line.
Yeah.
You're borrowing trouble and chasing a ghost of, well, what if? I look at it the other way. What if we kick their ass and we're the number 2 seed and we got our confidence back and we go for a repeat? And if they say, well, you shouldn't have played him, you can't win. If you play him and he gets hurt, people are pissed. If you don't play him and you lose, why are we playing for the 3 seed or the 4? Why aren't we trying to have a home game? I'm not a big guy on rest. When it rest, yes, when you need it, but 3 weeks of it, if you're the 1 seed and while the Eagles would be playing, you're taking a week off and maybe they need fresh legs. That's the coach's job to decide. Are fresh legs more important than keeping in the rhythm that we feel like we're in mentally, not the on the field action. Right. So I don't like it, Sag. I never have 1 seed. I even want Peyton when we always have this question. I at least give me a half so I can get into some rhythm like you would in a preseason game and then get him out if you can't move anywhere. I just think 3 weeks for the 1 seed is too much. And for Philadelphia, I actually think Philadelphia needs work. I think they need to find something, and Atlanta's a good team to find it on.
Yeah.
And plus, it's going to test you. Can you go stop what, Bijan? You guys, as good as we are, isn't that who they play, you said, this week, right, Sags?
The Eagles, no, they play the Commanders, sorry.
Oh, who did you say played Atlanta? You did say the Commanders. Football team, bad defense. Same difference. I'm still stuck on Bijan because I want him on my damn fantasy team when it was over. But yeah, so they're playing Washington. No quarterback, or at least the starting quarterback, the defense. But don't you want to go in there, Segs, and get it rolling where your offense has 3 good series? Then get them out and give post a lead and then hope your backups can hold on. So, yeah, I'm not all in on a lot of rest unless the guy's nicked up or really exhausted. Momentum's a good thing. Yeah, and Myles Garrett needs a rest too, and they got nothing to play for. He wants to go get ready. You think, what's that guy's motor going to look like it has all year? Relentless. I like to play relentless. I'll worry about the injuries if they come, and I'm not going to play an injured or hurt player. But if I'm healthy, my offense needs rhythm. I prefer to play as opposed to rest. And I know people say, well, I've got nothing to lose. But then I got to decide, are fresh legs more important than wearing them out right now? That's what you got to decide on your team and get a look in their eye and find out if they're moving better with a week off or if you need to play them. Some teams aren't mature enough to handle a week off. Philly should be. If they were the 1 seed, I'd say 3 weeks is too long. Their offense isn't good enough to take 3 weeks off. It's just not. Yep. So we'll see going forward. But I'd prefer to play Segs when there's something to play for. It's not like they have nothing to play for. It's a 2 seed. And that means having them come into your building.
It means multiple.
Nobody wants to go play there. Games, yes. No doubt. Win. No doubt. I think it's a mistake. That's just my opinion. And I think they could be a first round out if they're not careful. I'm just telling you, they're not careful.
As a Bears fan, I'm glad they're doing it. All right, let's end the show with our 6-pack of picks. We'll pick the 4 college football playoff games and a couple NFL games. Let's start in the NFL. Panthers at Bucks. This is for the NFC South. Again, as I said, the Bucks don't control their own destiny. If the Bucks win and Atlanta beats New Orleans.
That's what it was. It was Atlanta-New Orleans game. Helping out the Bucks to get in.
The Panthers would get in if in that scenario. All right,
I think the Panthers are a better team than the Bucks right now, Sakes.
I do right now. It's a 2.5-point game with a 43.5 over under. You like the Panthers in this game, even, you know, you're getting 2.5.
8 weeks ago, I'd have said, I'm taking the Bucks. I'm taking the Panthers, and I would take the under in the game. I just don't. I love Baker. If Baker's got the ball last, they're going to go score and win it. I just think the Panthers are playing better football than them. I do. I understand they've had their ups and downs. I like the trend of where the Carolina's headed, though, Segs. I do. There's a part of me that wants to pick the Bucks, but I just don't feel comfortable. I'd probably bet the total points before I'd bet the game. I think it'll be a fun game, a little ugly at times. But I'm going to say the Panthers are capable of going on the road and winning this game. I'm going to take the Panthers.
Yeah, I wrote down Carolina money line and the under, same as you.
There you go.
With the over-under. All right, then you got the battle for the 1 seed in the NFC. You got the Seahawks at the 49ers. Seahawks, a road favorite, -1.5, 47.5 over-under. And this kind of goes into what you were talking about, where if Chicago would have beat San Francisco last week, Seattle might have been a little more, okay, let's play a half with our starters, maybe a little bit with them, and then we'll see what the
Bears get some rhythm and get out, right?
Yeah. Hopefully we got that 1 seed locked down. But you have a massive game here. This is the difference of if you're San Francisco and you win this game and you keep winning, you don't have to go anywhere because the Super Bowl's in San Francisco. So the fact that they could win this game and play what would be five straight home games through the Super Bowl if they continued on, counting last week's Bears game, then this week's, and then the three playoff games. I mean, you're talking about the 49ers playing at home the rest of the way, but do you think Seattle can walk into San Francisco and beat them and take care of the one seed here?
Oh, I think they can, but I'm taking the 49ers, Sigs. I love the way their offense is playing right now. I do. And I would probably – I know it sounds crazy, but both of these teams are scoring in their quarterback play. And I actually think the over is going to hit in this game. I do. 49ers still – I mean, the 49ers, if they get eliminated, you know what it's going to be. It's going to be their defenses because whatever it is, the attrition injuries – but when they're playing in front and running it and getting McCaffrey involved, Brock Purdy's at the top of his game, man, and he's playing really well. Darnold's had a great year. Give me a late win by the 49ers at home, and I think the story value is going to be off the charts considering where they were. If Shanahan hasn't locked up off the coach of the year with what he's done with that roster, it's incredible, man. It's incredible. I'm going to take the 49ers. My heart's with the Seahawks in this one. Played there. The last elimination game, Sam, even though it's not elimination, but I consider the one seed an elimination. If you go from one to a different seed, play it like an elimination game, Sakes. The last memory Sam has of this is what? Getting beat by the Rams in the playoffs. So in a single elimination, it wasn't fun. And so this is a chance. I think it's going to be one hell of a watch quarterback play. Give me the 49ers late. I would take the 49ers to win the game. I'd take them on the money line. And I would take the over in the game. I think points will be scored because I think both offenses are explosive and both are playing for something massive.
Yeah, I have Seattle in the over. I think San Francisco's defense just isn't good. We saw it last week.
That will be the reason they lose if they lose, Sage.
And I think that's where – I think the 49ers will be able to put up some points, but Seattle's offense with the way they run the ball with Charbonnet and Walker and then getting – Jackson Smith and Jigba the ball with Sam Darnold and the rest of his weapons. I just think Seattle is the more talented team, and they have the better defense with Mike McDonald calling the plays there that I think, you know, make it a 30-20 type game for me in Seattle winning.
Darnold goes in with the way you described the mentality, Sigs, and says, don't play scared, but my defense is going to give me opportunities. I don't have to win this game with one throw.
Right.
Seahawks will win. I'm with you. See, the 49ers' strength is what right now, Sigs? They're unloading on offense right now, yes. Right? The Seahawks can score a ton of points. In Jigba and Sam, they've had great years, and they can run it physically. Yep. Matter of fact, they will pound you in between. They will run the ball at you now.
Yeah.
Defensive mentality with the coach. If they both play their very best, considering their rosters right now, the Seattle defense should win out, make one more, two or three more plays than the 49ers do. But, man, the way Purdy's going to McCaffrey, the truth is you're going to have to limit McCaffrey's stuff.
Right.
And with Seattle, you're going to have to make sure if you're playing on third and six or seven against Seattle, dude, it'll be a different result. So, listen, I'm with you. I understand why you take Seattle. There's a part of me that the emotion, like just the story of where the 49ers were and here they are.
Yeah,
battling for this seed is quite amazing to me. So I'm going to take the 49ers, but I think it's going to be – this is the way it's supposed to be. Divisional game, late, playing for the one, let it all rip, and both of them are capable of playing right back in that building in February, and you and I both know it.
All right, let's move on to the college football playoffs. You got Miami and Ohio State. Ohio State almost a double-digit favorite in this game at 9.5. 40.5 is the over under. So that's what Vegas is telling you, that they're not giving Miami a shot at all in this game. What's one key for each team in this game? And then who do you pick as the winner?
For Ohio State, don't give up big chunk plays. Make them go 80 yards five times there. They won't do it. The quarterback he'll get impatient.
Yeah.
On Miami, force Carson Beck to win this football game. That's how you're going to beat them. I'm just telling you. On the other side, weapons, the physicality. I know Miami's rolling. I just think there's too much talent. If Saiyan protects the ball and doesn't turn it over, I think Ohio State wins by double digits. And I got a lot of respect for Miami. Miami's going to lean on their physicality, but what we know about Ohio State, they can defend you, and they are playing. He has done a great job with this defensive team this year at Ohio State. He really has. Our guy from New England, Matt Patricia. He's done a really good job, Sakes. He really has. And people questioned the move because he was an NFL guy, right? He's done a good job. I just think when all is said and done, the kid from Carlsbad, California, saying we'll make more plays, boring plays, than Carson Beck will. The simple just hand it off, throw the shell, like you saw TCU's quarterback make last night. He made a few plays. You're like, damn, he did a simple curl route. I just think when it's nut cutting time, Ohio State's got more moxie. Give me Ohio State, and give me Ohio State fairly big in this game.
Yeah, I think to me it just comes down to, can Miami do what they did against Texas A&M and make Julian Sayin's life hell? Because they had Marcel Reed mind going everywhere with the way they were blitzing. And
he was careless with the football, Sayin.
Yes, and I, a lot of that was just the pressure being put on him constantly by that Miami front seven. And I think that's going to be the key here. If they can, you know, just get Sayin off his spot early and not just sitting back there with a clean pocket and hitting those three great wide receivers he has. And then the big
plays in this game, Segs. Yeah. And you know what else? You mentioned getting him off his spot. And, you know, for Ohio State, I'm so glad you said that, because I would say if you're Ohio State, getting him off his spot's one thing. You have to change the launch point, because if Miami gets a chance to tee off on you, we're looking at a different score in the game.
Right.
I'm talking about up front, their front seven. So I just think Sayin will outbore Carson Beck. Give me Ohio State and fairly big in this one.
Yeah, I have Ohio State as well. And I took the over just because it's so low. I feel like these teams are going to put up some points. I don't think we're going to look at a 35-33 type game, but I think you're looking, you know, easily at a
24-14. I was gonna say that's 27-17 type game, right?
Yeah, that's where I have it. Yeah.
Something that along 27-17, that'd be 37. Yeah, you get the over there. That doesn't seem like much with two teams that are so talented with speed and perimeter people.
So that game is tonight. Tomorrow we have Oregon -2.5 versus Texas Tech. This is the 5-4 matchup. Two, I think, evenly matched teams. I think this might be my favorite game of the weekend. I love watching Dante Moore and that offense do their thing with Dan Lanning and company. I like Oregon in this game. I know Texas Tech has been a fun team all year, and they spent a bunch of money to get here, and it worked. They did exactly what the new college route to getting to the college football playoff is. It's spending loads of money, bring in all this talent, and then you got to put it on the field and coach it. And they've done that. And here they sit in the college football playoff, getting a bye into the second weekend. But I do feel like Oregon's just a better football team in the end. So give me Oregon here. But who do you have in this game, and what's a key for each team?
Yeah, Sigs. My better judgment, I mean, when you think about it, Oregon's like, okay, quarterback's really good. Dan Lanning's seen the movie. They are in this season. Every year we're having this conversation about Oregon. Right. It's been a minute. Texas Tech's gotten better, but they're in a different situation. How foreign is it to them? Pretty foreign, but how is the coach coaching it? I'm going to go opposite you, Segs. The way Texas Tech has played on both sides of the ball, I think they can win the whole thing. I don't know if that – I'm not picking to win the whole thing right now. I'm picking Texas Tech.
Okay.
Their defense is a friggin' nasty. I think they're playing with more swagger than anybody in college football right now. Not named. I do. Even though Indiana's won, I'm going swagger to the point where they actually think they think they're kicking, physically going to kick Oregon's ass. You do know this, right?
Right.
They do. And their offense is good enough to score 40. I don't know about against Oregon, but they can score as well. And I mean, I said, I know Oregon's better than BYU, but dude, the plan they have every time, the way they run and run to sideline and are physical, playing in your backfield. And when the ball's in the air, they catch it. Defensively, you know what I'm saying? They just do a lot of really good things. And there's a part of me that just thinks they're going to make a few more plays on the defensive side. They're both really versatile teams on both sides. It should be Oregon advantage with that quarterback. I'm taking Texas Tech, and I don't think it ends here. I don't think Texas Tech, this is it for them here. And I'm not sure next week's it for them either. We'll see. I'm going Texas Tech, Segs. I think their defense will be the difference, and they'll get a couple extra short fields. So the key for Oregon to me is you have got to keep Moore upright. You cannot be playing on third and nine after a sack. You can't.
Right.
And for Texas Tech, you did whatever. Don't play scared because you're in a position you haven't been in a while. Does that make sense? It's easy, yeah. Segs. I've seen it a million times. You get in here. We made it. You take a big sigh. We're Texas Tech. Nobody expects us. We're in. We've got a great year, and we're rolling. They're talking about NIL. Okay. But I think there's a mentality on that defense with the mustache gang and the way they're playing, that I actually think they think they're the best team in the country.
Yeah.
And they may very well be. So if they play like that for them, if Oregon's playing fast, Segs, and doing what they do, it's going to be tough to keep up. But I'm going to go with the physical defense over the offense. And even though Oregon's talented, give me Texas Tech to win this thing outright.
Okay. I like that. I like that. I wouldn't touch the number, the 51.5. That number.
This game could be 20 to this game could be 17 to 10.
Yeah,
this game could be 41 to 40. Right. But that's the defense. Yeah. When we're talking about it, if put it this way, Segs, if they both hit their peak offensively, gimme Oregon. If I get defensive performances like they have against BYU, mm-hmm. even though Oregon's more talented, I'll take Texas Tech. I'm leaning towards Texas Tech. I'm not a game-to-game momentum guy. I think they're playing with an inordinate amount of confidence right now. I'll take them.
The 9-seed Alabama versus the 1-seed Indiana. You got Indiana a touchdown favorite here. 47.5 is the number. I like what Alabama's been able to do this year, but I think Indiana is just a different story. They're just one of, if not the most fun team to watch in college football. Cignetti has turned into one of my favorite coaches. You kind of find him annoying when he's just kind of doing his thing and they're not very good. But as soon as they get good, you're like, okay, you see what
he's a reaction getter. Working. He loves to get reaction. Oh yeah.
Like a lot of times, especially those type of coaches, they're coaching a 6-6 team. And it's like, okay, your spiel's running dry. Like, let's just get away from us. Get off the TV.
Stop the chatter. We've had enough.
When they're winning though, and you see it start to work, then it's like, okay, I see what he's doing, and it's working for this Hoosiers team. And Fernando Mendoza is arguably the best player and the best quarterback in college football. And I think he leads them past Alabama in a pretty easy way. Like, I think Indiana wins this game by double digits. So I don't think this is going to be close. I think they get out front early, Indiana, that is. And Alabama isn't going to be able to run the ball. They haven't been able to really run the ball. So Indiana will take that away, and then Ty Simpson and company will have some big plays, but I just don't think it's enough to keep it close in this game. So give me Indiana and the over.
Shorten the game if you're Alabama. The one thing, and I stress it for them, I can't believe I'm coming to this saying I don't trust Alabama's run game.
Right, exactly.
I just don't trust their run game, and that bothers me. You can't keep expecting that quarterback to make plays like he's done all year and be, quite frankly, a very subpar running football team.
Yeah.
Indiana, this ain't your dad's Indiana. This ain't Cam Cameron's Indiana. This ain't Antoine Randall L's Indiana. Okay. This is real. You can't do what they've done real. And Segs, with all this, the number one pick of the draft, you know when Indiana's at its best? When Mendoza's throwing it about 25 to 28 times, and they're controlling that and doing their thing. And unless he has a two-minute drive, kind of boring. You're making the simple do the things that good teams do. I like Indiana in the game, but I'm going to say Alabama knows this time, and they know what's being said about them. I do think it's inside a one-score game. I'm taking Indiana to win the game, Segs, but we're betting the point spread. I think this is a little more than a field goal. Maybe a one-possession game at the end. I don't think it's double digits like you do. I think Indiana's better, and Indiana's going to win, and they're a national title contender, and they're number one for a reason. And they are physical. Don't lose that idea. They can pound you. I just think Alabama is going to play better, but Indiana wins. But I would bet Alabama gets inside the number. I don't want four blowouts this weekend, please, in these games. Maybe it's a wing and a prayer. Of all these teams, the Alabama Ole Miss two teams, I'm not sure how they're going to fit into getting to the national title. I think Alabama gets inside the number, though, and just guts one out, even if it's a backdoor cover. Indiana moving on, though.
And then last but not least, we got Ole Miss without Lane Kiffin, Pete Golding coaching them against Georgia. Kirby Smart, the SEC matchup, Georgia 6.5-point favorite, 55.5 over under.
I'm probably barking up a tree that I shouldn't be barking up. I don't think that Ole Miss is going to – I think that Georgia – of the four games, you know which one I'm most comfortable with?
This one?
And I'm really comfortable with Ohio State. This one after the Ohio State and Georgia game. I think I don't think Ole Miss is going to stay in this game.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I love
– I had it the other way. I have Georgia winning, but I think Ole Miss keeps it close. We're kind of opposite on the last two games.
Yeah, what, so it's 6.5 points. What is close? Inside of 10 or over 10?
Oh, I think Georgia covers plus the points. See, I don't think they do. I think Georgia wins, but I think it's a 6-point game.
So you think it's like a field goal type game? Two field goals. Okay.
In that range, yeah.
I am betting this. I am comfortable. Now, if nothing would change, and I love what Pete's doing there and having Chubb, they're a good team, and the quarterback's pretty dynamic, right? But I just remember what I said about the physical side? This is where Georgia lives.
Yeah.
I just think that that's going to be the in the end. And their ability, and you know, Georgia's put themselves in some bad binds this year. They've had to overcome and get a little help late. I think, and when I say a blowout, it's maybe not fair, it's a touchdown. I do think they cover, and all respect for Ole Miss, but I think Ole Miss run ends today. I would probably think different if nothing would have changed with them with the coaching switch, even though I respect Pete, but not enough time. I just think Georgia's a better team, and it will not shock me at all if when we crown the national champion, I've been saying this for what, about 5 weeks, that Georgia may end up being the best of all of them when all's said and done. But give me Georgia in the game, and I would pick them to cover. I'd lay those points.
Yeah, I have Ole Miss being inside the number, and I'll take the over because I think if Ole Miss is going to win this game or keep it close, it's going to be a little bit higher scoring than you think.
If the game, if this gets to the over, you may get your wish because the more points that are scored in this one in a shootout, I'll take the guys on the left, meaning Ole Miss on the left of that screen. I take Ole Miss in a shootout, but I don't know if we're going to get to that point. I expect Georgia to step up their game defensively.
Real quick before we get out of here, Iowa is just beating the shit out of Vanderbilt right now, 28-3. The SEC can talk about how bowl games don't matter and all this stuff, but they have not looked good in bowl games this year, including I don't know that they've won a game against a Power 4 opponent yet in bowl games. It's 28-3. Diego Pavia, everyone's favorite Heisman runner-up, is not doing shit against that Iowa defense that we talked about earlier in the show is really damn good.
So he hates the Heisman. He's mad at the Heisman voters. He also about to hate Iowa's defense with the way they're kicking his ass today, right? So isn't this typical Iowa? Go around, end up saying, what win will this be for them? How many wins will this be for Iowa?
Probably nine.
I was going to say 9 or 10. Are they?
Yeah, this would be 9-4 if they win this game,
dude. They'll bore you to 9 wins.
They do.
Look ugly doing it. Coach will get a contract raise, and they'll beat you, and they'll walk out of here, and everybody's talking about all the pomp and circumstance, and Iowa just wins another football game. It's crazy.
It's the exact opposite of USC. Go find some young offensive play caller that's going to open it up, change the way you do offense, but keep everybody intact on defense and the way you do it. And you can still run the ball like we've talked about. A lot of these big guys that the off Ben Johnson's, Kyle Shanahan's, they love running the ball. Sean McVay, they love running the ball, and then it opens up the passing game. Why doesn't I don't know. I don't get it. But
I'm with you, Sags, and I'll tell you another thing about this is I'm going to just send a message to Vandy and all respect. What a great couple of years, and they're well coached. Love them. Yeah. You're not good enough to mail in a bowl game. Sorry, you are not. You don't have enough skin in the game to mail in a bowl game and show up and just half-ass it the day before New Year's. You had a good season. I don't mean – I'm talking about the history. Vanderbilt, you shouldn't know where you've been living is my point. And where you've been living except for the last couple of years is you were everybody's bye week. They'd like to come there to play you. Well, we saw it. Alabama came there, kicked their ass, and we've seen it last year. And then they kicked – you know, they're playing great. They've had some great moments this year, and I love them. But I don't care who's playing, who's not. You're still lining up playing. You still got scholarship players. Vanderbilt, don't get too caught up in the fact that you're not Georgia. Okay, you started you should never take one game for granted because we're talking about you in a big way. Don't let this sour the season where you get beat 42-3 and we're saying all of it for naught because they got their ass kicked in an important moment.
This is I think Clark Lee is going to regret the fact that, you know, he was up for the Penn State job. He was talked about for some other bigger jobs, in my opinion. And he chose to stay at Vandy, got the extension. James Franklin got out at the right time. And then Vandy kind of fell off and they had to be built back up. Clark Lea may be regretting his decision here in a couple years.
They're playing like it right now, Sags. Yep. They are playing like it.
All right. Well, Happy New Year to everybody, to all our listeners, our viewers. We appreciate you guys very much. 2026 is going to be a great year for Unpaved. And we're going to keep adding to it, keep adding, do some different stuff that you guys, you know, will like to follow. And we'll be here next Monday. Wrap up, set up the NFL playoff with Coach JB. And we got a ton to talk about as we continue on, as the football season is winding down quicker than I think we even realize.
Yep. We got our team. And this team here, we don't enter the transfer portal.
No.
I have extended. I've
resigned.
Right. And we got our team from Laura and Bailey and Triple E and you and myself. One more piece will be added in January. And we are going to turn this with your guys' help, because we won't quit working hard. We won't quit working smart or urgent. We don't want to take days off. We will hopefully by 2026, when we're sitting here next year to say, have a happy new year, that everybody in the country want to watch, just for the fact that, because I think we do it right. And I hope we do. But it's all because we get great people following us. And I think we're ready to even take it to an explosive level in our best year ever. And I can't wait. We're just getting started, I guess, is my point.
I'm just waiting on my graphic for saying that I resigned to Unpaved for 2026. I haven't seen it yet. So, you know, like
the NIL check. Yeah. The NIL check is in the mail.
Yeah, there you go.
And I know you signing bonuses and shit. I mean, I get it, man. Hold me hostage, because you know
I'm actually going to go take some visits, but I'm also going to visit Unpaved too.
Oh, you're really committed, but you're going to go entertain other offers? Great. Thanks. Appreciate you. Yeah, I'll say, we'll just raise your size. You're playing the old flirt with another school, so the new 10-year salary goes off the charts. Right. I love it, man. Best team ever. No transfer portal. We are loyal to you guys, and we're going to be here. And this is going to turn into as good a podcast and show. Forget pod, just show as there is in the country, because we're passionate. We love it, and there's not a whole lot of fluff here. We're just going to get after it. So thank you.
Make sure you
have a great new year.
To YouTube and like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We'll see you guys in the New Year's. Happy New Year's to everybody. We'll talk to you later.
Amen. Peace. Unpaved Sean Salisbury here. We're bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.